Antony celebrated with a banquet. Chapter 3. Herod, Master of Palestine. All this time, Antigonus was besieging Masada, whose defenders had plenty of supplies of every other kind, but were short of water. In view of this, Joseph, Herod's brother, with 200 of his men, planned to make a dash for Arabia, being informed of Malichus's desire to make amends to Herod. He would actually have left the fortress had it not happened that on the night of his departure, rain fell in torrents. The reservoirs were filled to the brim, and he had no further wish to escape. They began to make sorties against Antigonus's forces, and now engaging them in the open, now luring them into ambushes, destroyed large numbers. Of course, they did not succeed every time. Sometimes they were worsted and had to retreat. Meanwhile, Ventidius, the Roman commander sent from Syria to check the Parthians, after dealing with them, had crossed into Judea, professedly to assist Joseph, but really to get money out of Antigonus. He encamped very close to Jerusalem, and after lining his pockets to his satisfaction, withdrew with most of his troops. But he left Silo in command of a detachment, for fear that the removal of the whole army might make it only too evident what he had been after. Antigonus, meanwhile, in the hope of further help from the Parthians, courted Silo to avoid any interference with the fulfillment of this hope. But by this time Herod had sailed from Italy to Ptolemais, and having raised a substantial force of Jews and foreigners, was marching through Galilee against Antigonus with the cooperation of Ventidius and Silo, whom Dellius, on Antony's behalf, had induced to assist Herod's return. But Ventidius was busy settling sporadic disturbances resulting from the Parthian occupation, and Silo remained in Judea, bribed with Antigonus's money. Not that Herod lacked support. As he moved on, his strength steadily grew, and apart from a few localities, all Galilee took up his cause. The most urgent task facing him was Masada. He must, first of all, rescue his family and friends from the siege. Joppa stood in the way. It was in enemy hands and must be reduced first. Otherwise, while he went on to Jerusalem, his opponents would remain in possession of a stronghold behind his back. He was joined by Silo, only too pleased to have found a pretext for leaving Jerusalem. The Jews followed in pursuit, but Herod swooped on them with a handful of men, routing them easily and rescuing Silo, whose efforts at defense were feeble. He then took Joppa and hurried on to Masada to rescue his friends. Some of the country folk were drawn to him by their friendship with his father, some by his own fame, some by the desire to repay the kindnesses of both, the largest number by the prospect of a stable monarchy. Consequently, he had now got together an almost invincible army. Antigonus tried to check his progress by laying ambushes at suitable points on his route, very ineffectively as it turned out. Herod had no difficulty in freeing his friends in Masada and recovering the fortress of Thresa. He then set out for Jerusalem, and was joined by Silo's men and many Jews from the city, alarmed at his strength. Having pitched their camp west of the town, Herod's men became the target for the arrows and javelins of the guards on that side, while others made organized sorties to test the strength of his outposts. Herod at once had proclamation made all round the walls that he came for the good of the people and the preservation of the city, that he would take no action even against his undisguised enemies and would grant even his bitterest foes an amnesty. Antagonus's staff countered this appeal by forbidding anyone to listen to the proclamations or to cross over. So Herod gave his men leave from then on to return the shots from the battlements, and they hurled their missiles to such effect that the towers were quickly cleared of defenders. At this point, Silo's venality became evident. He put up a number of his men to raise a clamor about short rations, and demanded money for food, and to insist on being marched to winter quarters in a suitable locality. There was nothing to be had anywhere near the city, as Antigonus's men had taken the lot. Silo thereupon began to strike camp in an attempt to withdraw. But Herod approached the Roman officers, and then appealed to the rank and file not to leave him in the lurch when he had come with the authority of Caesar, Antony, and the Senate. That very day he would supply their wants. He had no sooner ended this appeal than he set out in person for the countryside, returning with supplies in such abundance as gave the lie to all Silo's pretexts. And to guard against any possible shortage in the coming days, he requested the people living round Samaria, this city having espoused his cause, to bring corn, wine, oil, and cattle to Jericho. Hearing of this, Antigonus sent orders round the country to block or ambush the food convoys. The people obeyed, and a large number of armed men gathered above Jericho and stationed themselves on the hills to watch for the supply column. However, Herod was not idle. He set off with 10 cohorts, 5 Roman, 5 Jewish, with a sprinkling of mercenaries and a few of the cavalry, and arrived at Jericho, which he found deserted. But the high ground had been occupied by 500 men with their wives and families. These he captured but set free, while the Romans poured into the rest of the town and looted it, as they found the houses full of luxuries of every kind. Leaving a garrison in Jericho, the king returned, and sent away the Roman contingent to winter in districts that had come over to him, Idumea, Galilee, and Samaria. Antigonus, for his part, by taking advantage of Silo's venality, persuaded him to billet a portion of his army in Lydda, a sop to Antony. While the Romans enjoyed every comfort and a complete rest from fighting, Herod was not idle. He occupied Idumea with 400 horse and 2,000 foot, led by his brother Joseph, to forestall any movement in support of Antigonus. His own task was to transfer his mother and all the kinsmen and friends he had brought out of Masada to Samaria. When he had settled them safely there, he marched on to secure the remainder of Galilee and expel Antigonus's garrisons. Forcing his way through a blizzard to Sepphoris, he occupied the city without opposition, the defenders fleeing at his approach. There he refreshed his followers, battered by the storm, with the plentiful supplies available, setting out next against the bandits who lived in caves and overran a great part of the country, causing the inhabitants as much misery as a war could have done. Sending on 3 infantry brigades and 1 troop of cavalry to the village of Arbela, he joined them 6 weeks later with the rest of his army. His coming failed to frighten the enemy, who went out armed to meet him with all the skill of warriors as well as the fearlessness of bandits, and joining the battle, routed Herod's left wing with their right. Promptly swinging round his own right wing, Herod came to the rescue, made his fleeing troops face about, and falling on the pursuers, brought their advance to a halt, finally, by frontal attacks, breaking their resistance and putting them to flight. He pursued them to the Jordan, attacking all the way and destroying a large proportion of them, the survivors scattering beyond the river. Galilee could now breathe again. The only bandits left were lurking in caves, and it would take time to deal with them. So Herod's next act was to bestow on his soldiers the fruits of their toil, awarding each man 150 silver drachmas, and sending much larger sums to the officers in the various camps in which they were wintering. Pheroras, his younger brother, he appointed to lay in stores of provisions for them and to fortify Alexandrium. Both tasks Pheroras faithfully performed. At this period Antony was living near Athens, and Ventidius sent for Silo and Herod to take part in the Parthian War, instructing them first to settle the problem of Judea. Herod was delighted to second Silo to Ventidius, while he himself took the field against the bandits in the caves. These caves opened onto almost vertical slopes and could not be reached from any direction except by winding, steep, and very narrow paths. The cliff in front stretched right down into ravines of immense depth, dropping straight into the torrent bed. So for a long time the king was defeated by the appalling difficulty of the ground, finally resorting to a plan fraught with the utmost danger. He lowered the toughest of his soldiers in cradles till they reached the mouths of the caves. They then slaughtered the bandits with their families and threw firebrands at those who proved awkward. Wishing to save some of them, Herod invited them to come up to him. Not a man voluntarily surrendered, and of those who were brought out forcibly, many preferred death to captivity. One old man, father of 7 children, was begged by the children and their mother to let them come out, as their lives were guaranteed. His response was terrible. One by one, he ordered them to come out, while he stood at the cave mouth and killed each son as he emerged. Herod, in a good position to watch, was cut to the heart, and stretched out his hand to the old man, begging him to spare his children. But he treated the suggestion with contempt, went so far as to sneer at Herod for his lack of guts, and after disposing of the last of his sons and killing his wife too, flung their bodies down the precipice, and finally leapt over the edge himself. Master now of caves and cave dwellers, Herod left what he deemed a sufficient force to deal with any rising, with Ptolemy in command, and turned back towards Samaria with 600 cavalry and 3,000 heavy infantry to settle accounts with Antigonus. His departure removed all restraint from the habitual troublemakers in Galilee. They killed his general Ptolemy in a surprise attack, and systematically ravaged the country, establishing their lairs in the marshes and other inaccessible places. Informed of the rising, Herod speedily came to the rescue, destroyed a large number of the insurgents, reduced by siege all their fortresses, and as a penalty for their fickleness, made the towns pay a fine of 100 talents. By now the Parthians had been driven out and Pacorus killed. So Ventidius was able, at Antony's suggestion, to send support to Herod in his struggle with Antigonus. 2 legions and 1,000 horse. Their commander, Machaerus, received a letter from Antigonus begging him to come to his aid instead, complaining bitterly of Herod's unscrupulous use of force against his kingdom, and promising to make it worth his while. Machaerus, however, was not prepared to disobey higher authority, especially as Herod was offering more. So he refused to turn traitor, and, simulating friendship, went to spy out Antigonus's position, disregarding Herod's warnings. Antigonus was not deceived, but shut the city gates in his face and shot at him from the ramparts as an enemy, till the crestfallen general returned to Herod at Emmaus, so furious at his failure that he killed every Jew he met on the way, not sparing even Herod's men, but treating everyone as a supporter of Antigonus. This made Herod so angry that he was on the point of attacking Machaerus as an enemy, but, mastering his rage, set out for Antony's headquarters to expose the outrageous conduct of his subordinate. Machaerus, realizing his mistake, followed on the king's heels, and by eating humble pie, mollified him. But Herod continued his journey all the same, and when he heard that Antony was conducting a large-scale attack on Samosata, a well-fortified city near the Euphrates, he increased his speed, seeing an excellent chance of showing his mettle and placing Antony under an obligation. And so it proved. As soon as he arrived, he finished the siege for them, killing masses of the enemy and capturing quantities of booty, so that Antony's old admiration for his prowess was greatly strengthened, and he heaped new honours upon him, confirming his hopes of mounting the throne, while King Antiochus was forced to surrender Samosata. Meanwhile, a heavy blow befell Herod's fortunes in Judea. He had left his brother Joseph in complete charge, instructing him to make no move against Antigonus until his return, since the unreliability of Machaerus as an ally was evident from what he had done. But as soon as Joseph heard that his brother was a long way off, he disregarded his instructions and marched towards Jericho with 5 cohorts contributed by Machaerus. He went with the intention of seizing the corn crop at the height of summer. In hilly and difficult country, he was set upon by his adversaries. He himself was killed after playing a hero's part in the battle, and the Romans perished to a man. The cohorts were new levies from Syria, with no stiffening of veterans to strengthen the morale of raw recruits. Not satisfied with his victory, Antigonus went to such an extreme of fury that he even mutilated Joseph's corpse. Having got possession of the bodies of the dead, he cut off his head, although his brother Pheroras offered to redeem it for 50 talents. Antigonus's victory was followed by such an upheaval in Galilee that his partisans dragged the more important of Herod's adherents to the lake and drowned them. Many parts of Idumea, too, changed sides, though Machaerus was there, rebuilding a stronghold called Githa. Not a word of all this had yet come to Herod's ears. After the fall of Samosata, Antony had made Sosius governor of Syria, instructing him to assist Herod against Antigonus, while he himself returned to Egypt. Sosius, accordingly, sent 2 legions ahead to reinforce Herod in Syria, following on his heels with the rest of his army. But while Herod was at Daphne, near Antioch, vivid dreams informed him of his brother's death, and as he sprang in alarm from his bed, messengers came in with news of the disaster. For a brief while he gave vent to his distress, then postponing further mourning, hurried off at a killing pace in the direction of his enemies. Arriving at Lebanon, he was reinforced by 800 of the hillmen, and joined by 1 Roman legion. Without waiting for daylight, he led this mixed force into Galilee, where he was met by the enemy, but drove them back to their base and began a continuous assault on its fortifications. Before he could take it, a phenomenal storm compelled him to seek shelter in the village nearby. When, a few days later, the 2nd legion, sent by Antony, joined forces with him, his increased strength alarmed the enemy, and in the night they abandoned the stronghold. Herod next passed through Jericho, determined to take the speediest vengeance on his brother's killers. There, thanks to Providence, he had an astonishing and miraculous escape, which gained him the reputation of the darling of heaven. Many of the local magistrates had dined with him that evening, and when the banquet was over and everyone had left, the building promptly caved in. Deeming this a joint portent of dangers and deliverance in the coming campaign, at dawn he set forward with his army. About 6,000 of the enemy charged down from the hills and engaged his advance guard. They did not feel too inclined to meet the Romans hand to hand, but pelted them at long range with stones and javelins, wounding a large number, including Herod himself, who, as he rode along,